Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. And this is probably one of the most exciting episodes that we're going to be doing in a while because football is back. We had college football this Saturday. We had a great upset to start the football season with Florida State going down to Georgia Tech in Ireland, of all places. And then we've got some games this Thursday, which I think one of our Big Ten foes is going to be playing. I think Minnesota, North Carolina on Thursday. And then we've got, you know, obviously Saturdays where the, you know, the real kickoff goes where everybody's going to be playing. So Purdue's going to be taking on the Indiana State Sycamores. Got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the depth chart, maybe some in-season awards, you know, or preseason awards and who we think maybe is going to be some dark horses, things like that. We're also going to talk about our fantasy football league again. We're going to be doing that again. So if anybody's interested, just reach out to one of us on Twitter. We can get you hooked up with that. We've got probably five or six people in it right now. We'd love to get to, you know, 10, 11, 12 guys, or girls, you know, no judgment here whatsoever. We know we've got a huge female audience out there. So, anybody can join, and it's going to be a, I just saw Dylan's comment here. And you know, what's even funnier is it's not plugged in. I just thought it was funny to pick it up and go with the bit. So,
oh, then you fooled me. Yeah. I was like, oh, Damon got a new mic, man.
Yeah.
Is that a hairbrush? What?
But yeah, we've got football this weekend, guys. How are you feeling?
Football on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Football on Saturday. I haven't spoken these words because I'm scared that doing so will jinx it. But well, no rain in the forecast.
Right? Let's not. Yeah.
I did. You didn't hear me say that. Weather's looking good. 83 degrees. Nothing else to talk about there. I'm excited. I have not seen Ross Abe with a tunnel. I didn't go to a home game last year. I only went to an away game. Perhaps that makes me an even more diehard fan. I traveled to Virginia to watch him play. So,
and we were at that. Was it like a 6 hour rain delay?
6 hour rain delay. Yeah, that we went through last year. But I'm so excited. It seems like the summer's flown by.
You just can't hide it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It seems like the summer has just flown by, and these next few days are going to take forever. But I am going. I'm going to take off here super early. Russ, I know you're going as well. We definitely need to make sure we meet up before the game and have some fun and watch some Boilermaker football. Russ, how you feeling?
I mean, for Saturday, very confident, and for the season, honestly, very confident. Though I know we'll get into it later tonight, but I'm hyped, man. I'm hyped. And I'm already kind of got a chip on my shoulder because I retweeted some list. I think it was like College Football Report, CFB Report, whatever, that said what the top atmosphere in each state for college football was going to be this weekend. And they put Indiana as they host Florida International. But I was like, Purdue Indiana State is still going to be, even though, you know, FIU is a FBS team, Purdue Indiana State's going to be, they're probably going to be 20,000 more fans. It's going to be much more lit. It's going to be much more exciting. Like, I don't care if you got sitting in there. They ain't going to pack the rock.
Like, I think the angle that they're going for with that, Russ, is probably just due to the fact that it's probably going to be a competitive game. Yeah. I mean, it's probably a seven-point game, realistically. Yeah, new coach, Coach Sig.
I think it's a pick 'em. I think the fact that it's a new coach makes it a pick 'em for them. We won't get too much into Indiana, but yeah.
Anybody know what the line is on that game?
No, but did you guys hear that Pitbull, the artist, the singer, he bought, I don't know what the right word is. Basically, they named the field like Pitbull Field or Pitbull Stadium or something like that, and they're going to put Mr. 305 on the center logo.
Yeah, because shout out to the Pause Up podcast, who is the College Huddle representative for Florida International, and they were talking about it. So
it's Florida International. Mm-hmm. So IU is favored by 18.5.
Wow. Really? That's interesting.
Fun trivia question. I didn't ask you all this before. Does anyone know what the line is for Purdue?
I think I saw it.
27. and a half.
I think it's 32, isn't it?
32 and a half.
32 and a half now, okay.
All which right. is crazy. I didn't expect it to be that high. It opened at negative 36 and a half, which in today's college football landscape, I'm never taking that 36 and a half because the league gets too big. Teams start pulling starters. Teams start pulling second string players. I mean,
That is the one part that can throw it off when you get a line that big for sure. But I mean, Indiana State's a football team that's gone like multiple years without winning a game and many years with only winning one or two games. And they're at the FCS level. So I'm not surprised that even though, you know, Purdue has that national stigma of coming off a 4-8 season, being picked 18th in the Big Ten, I'm not surprised that people think that's a crazy line, but I don't think it's a crazy line. I think we cover it.
I feel kind of guilty. I'm not going to lie. There is a very small, like 2% part of me that's like, oh my God, what if we lose on Saturday?
Yeah.
As a Purdue fan, it's
always sorry, I don't know what happened there, guys.
For those of you listening and out watching, Damon was temporarily removed from his ability to speak was temporarily revoked. We shall see.
Like
Russ is having none of
that. There are any real Purdue fans in here watching this podcast right now. If you say that there's no inkling whatsoever in you of that, I don't know if I can call you a real Purdue fan.
That's I can't argue with that. One more thing I'll say about lines. I promise I won't get stuck on this forever. What fan base is drinking the Kool-Aid? Check this out. Louisville plays Austin Peay this weekend. Louisville opened as a 26.5 point favorite. They're currently a 36.5 point favorite. It's moved 10 points.
That's a big jump. So I mean, I'm surprised it wasn't in the 30s to begin with, but
yeah, somebody has a lot of faith in their team. And the only reason I checked is because that's my local team. So for anyone who doesn't know that when listening, that's why.
Yeah, and they're the Adidas school, or at least one of the big national Adidas schools. So they are a national brand in that sense. So there might be, you know, just some people that are a fan of Adidas, and they're like, hey, let's hammer the Louisville line.
So we have a depth chart, the first official depth chart, not a speculation depth chart as we see throughout the summer, but an actual official depth chart. Russ, what do you think your biggest surprise is?
I mean, the biggest surprise or the first thing that I started counting when I saw that obviously two true freshmen are starting was that there are 11 freshmen in the two deep. 11 freshmen. So that's impressive to me, especially considering some of the true freshmen like Terrion Grant he joined us in the summer, not in the spring semester. He wasn't in spring ball. So for him to be starting now, granted, he's probably starting in Nylon Green's spot, but –
yeah,
the way we rotate one or two defensive backs off the bench because we're kind of constantly rotating guys in, trying to keep guys fresh. My guess is that means he's still in the rotation even when Nylon Green comes back. He might not be the starting corner or the starting defensive back in that position, but he's definitely going to be involved. And so I'm excited to see him because he was a five-star. He reclassified to the 2024 class from the 25 class and somehow dropped to a four-star, probably had to do with signing with Purdue. Because that does affect it. What school you sign with actually does affect your star rating after the fact. But I'm excited to see what he can bring to it. And I'm excited for this receiving core. You know, as much as was made out of Brooks leaving and as much as made was especially TJ Sheffield leaving, a lot of people don't remember, if you listen to the coach's show late in the season, Coach Walters kind of took a shot at TJ Sheffield a little bit. And he talked about how our true freshman tight end last year, George Boerheim, who's I believe third on the depth chart for tight end starting out the season this year, he was more productive in that Indiana game in one game than that TJ Sheffield role was all season. So
yeah,
as much as it hurts to lose him because we saw all those touchdowns with Aiden O'Connell and the Brom, and you know, we had such high hopes for him with Hudson Card coming in. He clearly just was not a fit with what Graham Harrell wanted to do and what Coach Walters wanted to do, and maybe just Hudson Card's play style. So I don't think it's a huge loss. You know, the Burks could be a loss, but we've talked about it before. He also had a problem with dropping ball. You know, he did make some exciting plays, but he also cost us some first downs, you know, which caused some punts. So
I know some Oklahoma fans who let me know that in the spring game, he had a case of the drops as well. And they were all very excited about him. And there's a big question mark surrounding him right now from the Oklahoma fan base, from what I understand. I want to address. Go ahead, Damon.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm super bad about cutting you off. So go ahead.
No, I just want to address this this comment here from Nick Burris. Hey, Russ, is the Fantasy League back on? It is. For anyone who missed the intro where we discussed that, the Fantasy League is back on. Get a hold of us. Just send us a message on Facebook, Twitter. We'll make sure we get you.
Nick's actually in there. So, Nick, check your sleeper.
You're in there?
Yeah, I actually kept a few people that I knew would be interested. I just kept them in when I renewed the league. So,
Nick, you're in there, Nick. Nick, you tailgating this weekend? Because some of us are coming up. For the game, myself, Russ, yeah. Dylan, I know you're an often tailgating person. So if we were able to join, come by and say hi. Definitely let us know where to meet you at.
Frank will have a warm Bud Light with your name on it.
Yeah, Coors Light. Yeah,
Coors Light.
I'm gonna be trying to get up there early too because I'm driving solo up there. I'm meeting and watching the game with my brother and two sisters. But I'm driving solo because they're driving from Anderson. I'm driving from down in the Louisville area close to where Frank resides as well. So I'm going to try and get up there early and try to hit, you know, if anybody's tailgating like 7, 8 a.m., like they're excited about this, let me know because I'll stop by and say, hey.
Yeah, I want to address this actually, this really good comment here, because this is something I had, a big question I had that I didn't prompt you guys about this beforehand, but I wanted to get your raw reactions too. But since it's being brought up, let's talk about this. One thing about the depth chart, only piece I see missing is a big back for third and short, such a big problem last year. So that was going to be one of my questions to you all is, will we be able to run the ball in short yardage, third and one scenarios? And I
didn't, didn't Mockaby gain like 20 or 30 pounds in this offseason?
I think it was more like 10. He's listed at 207. I think, well, so that's about 20, he's 195 last year. So 12 pounds. I think the problem last season was more of an offensive line problem than it was a running back problem. And I'm sure everyone remembers the criticism that, you know, why can't we run the ball on third and one? What are you doing? Just throw a quick little screen. And then we started throwing quick little screens and it was like, what are you doing? Running up the middle. And I mean, all sorts of things, but, comment here from Vinny Sutherland. I wish I could be there on Saturday. Vinny, we wish you were able to come as well. I know you'll be watching and cheering on Purdue, but we can talk about offensive line for a second. A lot of depth added. Russ, what do you think?
No, I was going to say, that was actually this other thing that I tweeted out about this depth chart that I noticed was the size of the O-line, the size and the depth. Because one thing that Walters talked about going into the offseason and especially coming into signing day was that, you know, he wanted to hit the transfer market hard for O-linemen as well, because he basically said, if you're not 6'4", 300 plus, we're going to struggle as an O-line in the Big Ten. Well, every starter and all but one person on the two deep depth chart is at least 6'4" and at least 300 plus pounds. And we're looking like, you know, cause you know, I'm assuming that this is accurate, you know, depth chart, cause they include injuries. Cause obviously Nyland Green and on there, CJ Smith and on there, but you know, we actually have Musa, Hartwig, Bo, and then transfers in Wingfield and Stewart healthy to start the year. So we're not starting, you know, we were depleted going into last year because people forget Walters got a late start going into last season in the recruiting trail, got a late start in the transfer portal. We didn't have the bodies in spring ball and in the training camp to really rotate guys through and get good experience. We had troubles keeping guys healthy because we started with our third string center. And then we just had guys go down, it seemed like, every game, you know, if not two guys a game on the O-line. And I think we're starting way different. And that is how you run the ball. You know, yes, it's great to have a dynamic back in Mockaby and in Reggie Love. But if you don't have the blocks and you get hit in the backfield, I mean, we're going up against guys that are, you know, Cole Brevard's a big dude. We're going against guys like that every week that are 6'4", 6'5", 300 plus on the defensive line. So if we can't match that size, we struggle. And that's what you saw last year.
Yeah. Speaking of O-lines and D-lines, this is something that I was wanting to bring up earlier. So I saw today on Twitter that a tight end from LSU is transferring to Nebraska, is going to start practicing, like, tomorrow or this week sometime. So, Nick Caraway, Scorton, I know you're listening right now. You can come back home, okay? I'm waiting for you. Coach Walters is waiting for you. You can come back home, all right? That's just come on home, Nick. I miss you. So
it can still happen.
Yeah.
Now, Russ, one thing about the offensive line is I know the coaching staff is huge on Corey Stewart. Sounds like he's going to be a game time decision. Unfortunately, this week, I don't know if you saw the press conference today with Coach Walters, but he said he's basically a big question mark for right now. With the week two bye, do you just sit him if you're in charge?
And you want to talk about size? So the backup left tackle behind Corey Stewart, 6'6", 320. So, I mean, against Indiana State, I think he'd be able to hold his own. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think
that's why I'm hoping Nyland Green and C.J. Smith were held out of the Indiana State game, and it was announced like 2 weeks ago that they were going to be held out, is I'm hoping it's just because they knew this is not necessarily a bye game. Every game, you got to go out and earn it. I get that. But it's a game that we think we have the talent to win without a few key guys, and we'd rather go into Notre Dame healthy and go into the stretch run of the season healthy because they get an extra week, right, because we're on a bye in the second week of the season. So I think it might be different if we're, you know, we're stacking games together, but when you can get 2 weeks of rest for sitting a guy 1 week, I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, and Coach Walters said that at first he wasn't thrilled about the week two bye, but he said with all the, and it's a direct quote here, with all the soft tissue injuries, he's excited about it now. He said there's so many guys who just have tiny little nagging soft tissue injuries, and just an extra week for those guys to heal up is pretty cool. One thing I did look up, Russ, Corey Stewart transferred in from Ball State. Mm-hmm. His PFF grade for pass blocking last season.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
So what, like pass grade you said?
Pass block grade.
He says, can I guess, as he's looking at it on his phone?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
No, yeah, go ahead. I did have it somewhere in here. I was going to look it up.
It is 80.7.
Dang.
And so do you know where that would put him? Ranked among Purdue,
I think it's second behind
Purdue linemen for last season,
because Gus was 83 last season, so I think it was second, right?
Yeah, we put him number two. So yep. Gus Hartwig was an 83, so he would come in at second at 80.7.
Your left tackle should do, right? Your left tackle should be your best pass blocker as far as exterior linemen go, and your right tackle should be your run blocking tackle. So for him to be the highest graded left tackle blocking Hudson Card's blindside should be a huge confidence boost to Hudson Card this season.
And there are some players on here who may or may not be starting for the Boilermakers this week who have very low pass blocking grades. Let's just hope they've improved since last season.
I will say it is kind of concerning to me that he was a four-star O-line that went to Notre Dame and ended up coming to Purdue, Joey Tonona or something.
Yeah,
I think it's his name. Kind of concerning to me that he's still like second on the depth chart behind. I don't remember who exactly he's behind. I think he might be behind Hartwig.
Well, there's a story there for him too.
Oh, gosh. Is he have a nagging injury or?
So he was actually told I'm paraphrasing from memory here, so anybody can correct me here. But he was basically told he could never play football again and then retired. And then so he's coming off of basically not playing football for a couple of years. And then he came, obviously decided he wanted to play again and decided to like enter the transfer portal and ended up at Purdue. It's a fascinating story. I remember reading it and being like, wow, that's like that needs to be more widespread. But he had an injury, was told he couldn't play and rehabbed it. And now he's been cleared to play. And so so I imagine that probably has more to do with him just being still getting back up to speed, so to speak.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yep. Yeah, I just recently learned that. So we have a comment here. Walters has said he knows his top five, though he has confidence in the depth of the room. Would have won games against Fresno and Syracuse last year if we had our current OL situation. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to – Syracuse turnovers was a problem in that game.
Keep in mind, this is part of those notes and the things that I think – make it crazy for people to pick us 18th in the league going in this year, but we were the best rushing team in Big Ten play last year with those O-line issues and with people saying we couldn't pick up a yard, which I get that. There were definitely scenarios that stick out, and when you can't get the yard when you really need it, it doesn't matter that you had two games over 300 yards rushing. I get that. But with those issues, we did have two games over 300 yards rushing. We did lead the Big Ten in rushing in conference play last year, and we made our O-line better.
Pierce coming in clutch here. His comment here says, I think it was a car crash. Really interesting comeback story. Other offensive linemen in the room have said he's progressing well and plays like he had before injury. That's awesome. It's really good to hear. So, yeah, it was a car crash. So, yeah, he was in a car wreck and thought he'd never play again. So, really, really inspiring story. Got another comment here. Have a question for you guys. Do we have the bigger guys that have muscled up in size personnel from last season that can hang with the big boy teams on the schedule this season? Yeah, I mean, I think to Russ's point, that if you look at, you know, the size of the starting offensive line, I mean, everybody's 6'4", 300 plus pounds of the starters, and then there's only one in the two deep under 300 pounds, and that's Jalen Grant, who we've seen do really good things. I think the answer
trying to be, you know, disparaging to Ball State, you know, we love them in state school, no hate, but I'm sure their strength and conditioning isn't what quite Purdue's is. And when Corey Stewart came over from Ball State, he was listed at 303. On our depth chart, he's at 318, so that's 15 pounds he supposedly added, right? DJ Wingfield came in from New Mexico, he was listed at 290 when he transferred. Now he's 316, that's 26 pounds he supposedly added. So, yeah, I would say we got the big dudes, and then we added some weight to them.
Shout out to the nutrition team too, then.
Yeah. Shout out to the cooks.
Yeah.
Russ, you mentioned true freshman. I do want to point out, I don't know if we mentioned him by name, but Shamar Rigby is starting at that. I don't know how to read this, and that if the first wide receiver is wide receiver one, I would say that's probably a stretch to say he's starting at wide receiver one, but he's starting a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Which isn't a huge shock to me because they've praised him so much throughout the summer. And I remember in an interview with Walters, they said, who has stuck out just overall? And he mentioned him by name. And I remember thinking, who, you know, and looking him up. Cause I'll be honest, I don't follow football recruiting as closely as I do should, but I'm not surprised to see him in a starting role for sure. And that's probably the thing I'm most excited to see. When I look at the step chart, is just what he can do. And I mean, obviously the coaching staff has a lot of faith in him and a lot of trust in him to have him starting over guys like Sawinski, who has, you know, is coming into his senior year now, and Jaden Dixon-Veal. And I mean, there's a lot of guys that could have that starting job. So.
Yeah. And then on defense too, I'm excited to see, I know Coy Beasley, he's second in his position on the depth chart. So I'm excited to see him getting some rotation on Saturday as well, because I'm sure he'll probably play quite a bit on Saturday if everything goes as it should.
So Dylan says he added weight this offseason. Yeah. Defensively, what – I mean, there are some obvious things that stick out, but I'll ask you guys what sticks out to you on the – we look at the defensive side of the depth chart.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Jenkins does in that linebacker role this season. So that'll be interesting to see. And then Will, I always mess up his last name. Is Berlung or Berlund?
Berlund.
Yeah, excited to see him. I saw streaks of him play last year, especially against Syracuse. Really liked it. Feel like he could do really well.
Yeah, and then it sounds like the coaching staff is really, really big on Will Helt starting at the edge.
You know, I was going to say that earlier when Damon was talking about bring come back, score, and come back. And not that I would, you know, turn that down, but I'm excited about Will Helt this season. You know, coming in as a true sophomore, he was kind of thrown to the fire last year in the new system. And obviously we had some issues containing the quarterback early in the season, and he was thrown in this role to try to spy the quarterback and also then start rushing the quarterback more. And he had a pick six in the spring game. He looked really good in the spring game, so I'm excited about him for sure.
I just remember, you know, we went to the game at Virginia Tech last year, and you know, everyone knows the rain delay, and we got to move up and basically have like what 10 throw seats or something like that. I mean, it was basically field level, and like his size just stuck out. And I just remember thinking, this guy is a true freshman.
Yeah,
like just on the sideline. I mean, he was clearly bigger than everyone else, but. Some exact quotes here about him. Wall called him a Terminator, and he called him a monster. So it sounds like he's a guy that, I mean, it, like Coach Walters doesn't just toss around comments or compliments like that left and right. So I'm excited.
He's talking about guys like Dylan Thieneman. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Vinny says to run Walter's defense, he must have corners. Agreed. Yep. And Vinny, I would love to get your take on this. It sounds like we could see, from what I've heard, it sounds like we could see kind of a mix of a 5-2-4 and a 4-2-5. It seems like we kind of have two different defensive schemes set up, one for four down linemen, one for five, and swapping the defensive back. So I would love to know what you've seen or what you think about that. But last year, Russ, we kind of had that, as you've called it, punt return defensive formation. will we see something different? Will we see five DBs?
Well, it was talked about going into last year, and I think it still holds true that there's not really a name for Walter's defense, and there's not really a number scheme for Walter's defense. I mean, it's not something you're going to see, especially Purdue not being the big name university and the big money university. EA College Football isn't going to go out and create a defensive playbook just for us like they would for like Georgia Tech's, play a triple option offense or Air Force's air raid offense. They aren't going to do that for Purdue, but if they did, it would be completely different than every other school, because it is like I joke about it, but it is almost like you played punt return safe man on Madden, and you have one guy that's like super ridiculous deep, and then everybody else is within like 5 yards of line of scrimmage. So you've got guys like, Cam Allen and Sanusi Kane that played kind of a corner role for us, but they're also kind of like just a real, 5 yard off the line of scrimmage safety type position, like where they aren't playing just man, they're playing a lot of zone right off the line of scrimmage. So, I don't think there's a set way you could describe how he plays his defense.
Yeah, so Vinny says 4-2-5 is a too high safety look. I highly doubt we see it. And then he said Walters runs what most call a 50 front, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is just five down, right? Rushing five. And we've got Dylan.
I think we see a lot of three down, to be honest. I know you said 4 or 5, but that's if you look at the depth chart, that's what it kind of implies, that we're going to have, three. And I know it says Brevard and Amande is kind of like an or. But if three of those D-line are down and Will Holt is just moved around as the rushing end, like you could see a lot of three down linemen look too. So like that's what I'm saying. It's not really a number you could, I think, describe his defense.
Yeah. And so Pierce has a comment here. Based on interviews, listening to Antonio Stevens, it sounds like other safeties playing in the box or closer to linebackers with Dylan Thienemann deep. Yeah, agree with that. Yeah. Who was it? I think it was Kendrick Breedlove who said he hopes that we get more secondary blitzes because he's ready for them, which is good to see.
Love this comment from Caleb real quick. I like that. Do you guys feel like – I feel like it's a good question. Do you feel like this is one of the most talented defensive backfields that we've had since probably 2003?
Well, let's talk about the defensive backfield. Dylan, there's a little bit of echo.
Yeah, probably. I'm on my phone. I just want to stop in and say what's up.
What's up, Dylan?
Hey. Russ, are you done talking?
I don't think I've said anything for like a minute. So,
no, I came in here and there was no introduction. You just kept yapping. So,
Wow. I wasn't even talking when you joined. Frank was talking.
Look at this background. Isn't it cool?
Why you gotta be a jerk, man? I'm gonna like slap you when I finally see you on Saturday.
It's like you're back at school, Dylan. You're back at work.
Well, that's pretty much what it is at work. So, just 91 degrees, All right. Well, have fun. Sorry you guys got to listen to Russ all night. That's on me.
Wow, man.
Thanks for stopping in, Dylan. Appreciate it, man. No
problem. Hey, Russ, are we doing the 40-yard dash on Saturday?
I mean, are we? We've both been dying in this heat all week.
That's true. Maybe we should wait till a cooler game so none of us die.
Because we
could set something up a little more official. Like we could get Vinny and Stu involved or something. Or we could get some charity involved or something. We'll do something.
Yeah, the charity is you and I trying to run 40 yards. That's what the charity is.
AARP. That's the charity.
It'll be like, when you AARP. See the videos of people that run like Ironmans and they're like dragging themselves to the finish line, that'll be you guys, but it's a 40-yard dash.
Yeah, people are going to be like, what'd they just do, run 10 miles? But like, no, they ran 35 yards. Barely making it to 40. No, I mean, if we both die, then that's pretty good content for the podcast. So,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Just ship my body back to Ohio. Yeah. All right, boys. Have fun.
All right. See you, Dylan.
Hey, man.
So, yeah, to answer this question, let's just run through starting backfield defensively. We have Markevious Brown starting with Derek Rogers Jr. behind him, a guy who saw a lot of time last season. No surprise, we have Dylan Thienemann starting. Sounds like his job's pretty much locked in. Antonio Stevens starting with Salim Turner and Muhammad behind him. Kendrick Breedlove, newcomer, starting with Coy Beasley behind him. And then last but not least, we have Tarian Grant, the kind of mystery player that Walters kind of hinted at last season. And then we all wondered if he was real and all that. But I think this has potential, you know, to be the best defensive backfield since 2003. And looks like there's some talking about who that 2003 defensive backfield was. Stu Reeves, and then Pollard. Yeah. Really talented defensive backfield there. Russ, Damon, what do you guys think?
Yeah, that's not a question we can answer right now, like at all. I mean, that's those guys. I mean, you know, everybody talks about obviously the offenses and Drew Brees and Kyle Orton's that we had, but our defenses were stacked with NFL talent as well during that Tiller era. And, you know, until we see what these guys do, because you're talking about, you know, transfers and Breedlove and Nyland Green, who wasn't even, you know, he's not on the depth chart because he's out. And he's supposed to be, you know, maybe our best corner this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coy Beasley is obviously a safety. I think Botrus Alessandro, who you didn't mention, who's listed behind Terry and Grant, he struggled at times last year. But I think that, you know, he gets a year in the system. He gets a little better.
Rodriguez
Brown was not, like, over-the-top impressive, but he got better as the season went on. So
he did get better as the season went on, yeah. Well, once he was kind of put in that kind of leading corner role after Marquise Wilson was hurt, he did slowly get better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely potential. It's definitely – I mean, but I think we just got it. You got to hold out because that's hard. That's like saying is Hudson Card going to go down as a better quarterback than, you know – Kyle Orton or Aiden O'Connell if we make a run this year or something. You know, like you got to do it. Like, we can't even talk about that yet.
Right. Yeah, man, I mean, I'm excited, though. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of like, I could see a lot of flashy plays on Saturday, like some really fun, like maybe even a pick six or two. I feel like these guys are really going to be able to show out Saturday and just show how athletic and big they are, and I think it'll be a lot of fun.
So official from Dylan Thienemann in an interview, he said, I think he's put on, 6 pounds and hasn't lost any speed, which doesn't sound like a lot. But, I mean, 6 pounds of raw muscle is 6 pounds of muscle. I mean, he has some highlight reel hits from last season already. So that's I'm going to be excited to see him. But perhaps the most exciting thing about him is the fact that he is officially listed as being the starting punt returner. Sounds like the fan base is a little mixed in how they feel about that. You know, obviously that's a position where people tend to get injured quite a bit. It's something he has experience doing, he said, in high school. How do you guys feel? I'm excited about it. I think that his speed could produce some problems for opposing special teams units, and I think he takes one or two to the house, to be honest with you guys.
I think that you put love Zawinski. No hate to the guy at all, but definitely let Andrew Zawinski get back there and catch those punts and run it up the field for a little bit. I would much rather have something that's like safe and consistent rather than like something that could potentially get Thienemann injured, which I know any play he could get injured, but you know, don't put him on the field more than we need to.
Yeah, my favorite quote about Andrew Zawinski actually comes from Jeff Brom. He said he's a dependable guy. And so every time I think about Andrew Zawinski, I think he's a dependable guy. So you're in the camp of you don't want Dylan Thienemann returning punts, right?
Yeah, I think he would do fantastic with it. I just don't want him to. I don't want to have to be out there any more than he needs to.
So who was one of Iowa's most dynamic players last year?
Cooper DeJean.
What did he do?
The same thing that Dylan Thienemann could possibly do.
Exactly. So the Big Ten is it's still an old school league. You know, we do get some high scoring battles going on, but think about how many one scoring games we're in last year where flipping the field on a play like a punt return could have been huge and changed the game for us. So yeah. I'm also hyped for him to be back there.
But I'm not an Iowa fan, so I don't care about what Iowa did. All right. They're corn fed down there. They don't I mean, I know Indiana we've got corn up here, but you know, I just it's the Purdue fandom in me is like, don't get hurt. Nobody look at him. Nobody breathe on him. Leave him alone.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think he could be absolutely
electric.
And when you can make an impact on special teams, that could be the difference in some of these games this year, because would you have a tough schedule like ours and you got a games that are like 50-50, like a, you know, Nebraska at home or like a Northwestern, you know, which I don't think Northwestern's a toss-up, but that's, you know, it's what people are saying. But, you know, he could be a huge impact player back there doing that. And I think that we have the depth now that if he has to take a player or two off because he maybe is winded, which I don't see a guy like him getting winded. He's just a physical freak. We've got the depth that I think if he's got to take a little bit of time off to be an impact on the punt return position, then I think it's worth it.
Well, I know in the interview with him about it, he seems pretty hyped about it. And maybe we see, you know, it's a scenario where we have two punt returners, right? You send Andrew Sawinski out there if you know you're just trying to basically, you know, fair catch it. Or, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited about it. I think that they're not going to put him out there if they don't trust him to make the right decision. But I mean, last season it was kind of boring when, you know, you're just going to, you know, get a fair catch every time. Comment here that Russ wanted me to point out, Purdue doesn't have enough playmakers yet to turn down playmakers and we can use them. Sad, but true. Yeah.
I hear all of that. And I think he's a great playmaker and I think he could do a lot of awesome things back there. I just don't want him to get hurt. That's all. And I know he can get hurt on any play. I know it's not logical to say that, but at the end of the day, I'd rather.
I mean, injuries happen to punt. I mean, it's a real thing. You gotta field the punt. I mean, it's sometimes they get guys cheap shot them. I mean, it happens. Yeah. There's no wrong answer is what I'm trying to say. So that's right. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you guys about that. Russ, Damon, when we look at this depth chart, we wanted to talk about dark horses, right? Who do you guys see as the, let's start with defensive, the defensive dark horse of this season?
So I tried to pronounce his name properly because he's got a tricky name. We'll put it that way.
I think we're thinking of the same guy then.
Boston College transfer, Shita Salah, I believe is how you might pronounce it. He's going to start as a rush opposite of Will Helt. And if you remember in Walter's defense last year, which is, you know, as bad as it might have been numbers-wise, we produced two of the top three sack getters and an All-American safety. So, you know, if it's, you know, Salah and Helt, you know, kind of eating on the outside during first and second down, and then we've got, you know, them releasing Jenkins on a rushing the passer role on third downs or passing situations, you know, Salah could be up there in some sacks this year. I think he could be very impactful. There's a reason he's coming in and starting right off the bat. Looked decent in the spring game. Didn't play a lot because I think they tried to keep, you know, some guys kind of protected a little bit. But I'm excited to see what he can do.
And I think the fact that you've got KJ now on the interior is just going to create more one-on-one opportunities for guys on the edge. I mean, you almost have to double team that. He's shown that he can get after the quarterback. And you know, can he do it from the center is, you know, TBD. I don't think he's going to have a problem. I don't think they're going to have to put him back there, or they're going to put him back there if, you know, if he's not able to. But yeah, I think that's definitely feasible. So Damon, that was your answer too.
Yeah. Well, the other one I was thinking of, I don't know if he'd really be considered a dark horse because I think he's just a very solid player, but I love Cole Brevard. I think he's going to just
huge fan of Cole Brevard.
Improve. So, I mean, I think he's just going to have a solid year and excited to see what he does on the interior of the D-line. So,
yeah, I completely agree with this comment here from Caleb. Assuming Helt is what they say he is or can be, then Madden and Salah are so vital to be threats. Agreed.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing Caleb on here a whole lot, but I like his opinions, man.
Caleb's dropping some truth bombs, and I'm liking everything he has to say. So my dark horse, I don't even know if we can call him a dark horse, but I'm going to call him a dark horse because in all the hype around this team, he's kind of getting overlooked. He's not getting talked about, in my opinion, as much as he should have because he's been described as, you know, taking a leadership role, and he had a great spring game. But I'm going to talk about Yanni for a second as kind of the dark horse. Everybody's talking about KJ. We know what he can do. Everyone's talking about the edge guys. Everyone's talking about the secondary, but like we haven't mentioned his name tonight, you know? So he, for that reason, I think he's going to have a monster season. I mean, he had two sacks in a row in the spring game, which was impressive to see. Now I know the sacks in the spring game were a little they're a little erring on the side of, okay, you're 5 feet from the quarterback, we're gonna call a sack. Now, yeah, obviously we don't wanna see anyone get hurt, but yeah, I think Yanni's gonna have a breakout year. But honorable mention goes to Mo Amunode. He has shown flashes of greatness, but that's, you know, small sample size from him. PFF loves him.
I was going to say, for talking about dark horses and being somebody we don't mention, and I know last year was kind of the first year I took PFF kind of seriously and really checked that a lot. He was somebody that kept popping up as one of the highest rated players on our defense throughout the year, even though he didn't get a ton of mention.
What about Joe Anderson? So I feel like he had a really good year last year too.
He did, yeah. And that's the thing is, like, when I look at the defensive line, it's, you know, there's two positions with or. So we've got Joe Anderson or DeMarjay Lewis, Cole Brevard or Mo Amunode. So I just think that, to me, that indicates we're going to have a lot more shuffling guys in and out.
Well, we had a lot last year. I mean, our whole front seven, or really front 10, if you're going to call it that, front 10. I mean, we regularly shuffled out. Now, the defensive backs or the corners up close to the line, it was more like we stayed with a set four in front of Thieneman. And then maybe one guy, if he got hurt or went down for a play, then somebody else would be like the sub, no matter what position it was. But yeah, defensive line and rushing positions, like we rotated guys in and out a lot. Like there was a lot of times where, with as much as Scorton, you know, specialized in sacking the quarterback, there'd be plays where I didn't see him on the field, and it's like, what's going on? It's like, because we rotated him out, even if it was somebody like Jenkins or Scorton last year.
Yeah, and the comment here from Pierce, I consider Madden an X factor rather than a dark horse, and totally agree with Caleb. If Madden can get some pressure on the other side, we're in good shape. And Madden's a guy we haven't really talked about tonight, other than the fact that he's injured. But I'm excited to see him on the field whenever that may be. They're kind of tight-lipped about that, which makes me a little bit nervous. But I have a feeling we will see him this year. So now let's switch sides. Let's switch over to dark horse offensively. Damon, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Jaden Dixon-Veal. I think he showed a lot of flashes last year, being a really solid wide receiver. I think he's quick. I think he can be dynamic. So I think he could be somebody, because I know a lot of people are talking about Edgerrin. A lot of people are talking about, you know, the Max Clair. That's another guy too. Not Max Clair, but the guy behind him, George Brenneman or whoever.
George Burhan, right? He had his breakout game last season. That was so fun.
And I think he was who I was thinking of at the beginning of the show when I talked about. I think I was thinking of Maccabee gaining like 40. Didn't he gain like 40 pounds? He's like 260 now, or two. He was like 220. Now he's like 260. Because I remember Nick in the group chat talking about him. He's put on a lot of weight, so hopefully that's a good thing.
I don't know what his weight was last season, but he's listed at 240. So Max Clair 6'4", 240. George Burhan's listed at 6'5", 240.
So I can see him and Clair, you know, giving each other a ton of reps. Kind of, it almost reminds me of like Durham and Herdman. Cole Herdman and Payne Durham. So,
and Purdue has just had a chain of good tight ends for like 10 straight years now. I just remember this time last year we were like, well, this guy Max
20 Clair, straight years go back to of. Tim Stratton, man, that's and like yeah. Dustin Keller yeah. and some of those guys Dustin like Keller.
We got a comment here. Don't know if you guys have seen a Twitter article posted by a Purdue affiliate that some experts have us an 8-1 season and Heisman candidate. That was likely, seriously, how true is that? I agree with you guys, there'd be more dark horses, and don't forget about Ethan Trent. I believe he's going to have a great season. I think I'm not sure if he's redshirting or not this season. I know he's not on the depth chart, but super excited to see Ethan on the field. That's going to be an emotional day, I think, for probably every diehard Purdue fan.
Yeah.
Russ, what do you got for a dark horse?
I mean, it's harder on offense because we've talked so much more about offense, right? Because that's the exciting part about football is who's going to catch the ball, who's going to run the ball. You know, offensive line's been a big position we've talked about in the offseason. You know, Hudson Card, we know about him. I'm a little surprised, though. Did you notice on the quarterback that Davila is actually third, even though he played second in the spring game, basically?
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised by that. I don't know if that's just like the, you know, you got to earn it kind of a thing.
Who was that? I didn't hear what you said.
Marcos Davila.
Yeah.
Oh, Davila. Gotcha.
Oh no, don't we going pronouncing his name wrong? So
yeah, well, they said it during the spring game is Davila, right?
Davila, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah,
we've had discussions. Davila, I think we were calling him for a while. Which yeah, but
in the coaches show, that's how they pronounce it too. And you know, they mentioned and Walters mentioned he goes, I made sure we pronounce it correctly and that we get the right people pronouncing it correctly. So. But, yeah, I mean, I'll mention another receiver that we haven't talked about that's actually starting is Jarryn Tipps. I think that
– Oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of guys for as much as people say the wide receiver room is a question mark. That doesn't mean there's not talent there. There's a ton of talent there. You know, don't forget about C.J. Smith when he comes back healthy. I see mentioned that there by Pierce. But, you know, Jarryn Tipps is – for him to earn that role as a true sophomore, you know, we got a true freshman. I mean, we got guys that if they're – you know, earning that role and creating chemistry with Hudson Card. We have some speedsters that I think could really make some big impacts. You know, I've said before, I think Max Clark could lead us in reception and receiving stats, but yeah, Jarryn Tipps, you know, that's somebody they mentioned late in the season as somebody that, you know, Coach Walters was hoping would step up and make some plays for us.
Yeah. I like that one. Yeah. He's one guy we haven't talked about tonight. So I'm glad he was able to get some spotlight. Yeah, I mean, so Caleb says almost any wide receiver could be thrown in as a dark horse, thing since they're all new. His dark horse is Reggie Love, who, spoiler alert, is mine as well. He's also a guy who hasn't really gotten much conversation tonight, but one thing Coach Walters said in one of his interviews is that there wasn't going to be a running back one, running back two, that they are truly a duo. And that, you know, some situations are going to be Maccabee, some situations are going to be Love. But I think he's a guy who's going to probably surprise and maybe even upset some Purdue fans. Because I know Purdue fans, like we tend to latch on to our people. And I think he could possibly steal some yards and some carries from Devin Maccabee, which may upset some people. But I think that Reggie Love will have a bigger impact than what people are giving him credit for right now. Runner-up being Jamal Adrien. I know this time last year when he got hurt, he was projected to be wide receiver one above Deion Burks, and Walt spoke very highly of him. So I probably have too high expectations for him, but I think he's a guy who's going to impress some people this season.
And look at the years on those receiver room, by the way. So, like, you know, Rigby's obviously a freshman. We mentioned that. Tibbs a true sophomore. Edrin's only a junior. He's classified as a junior. So, like, as much as he got injured last year, we're hoping big things. He's got 2 years less of eligibility. Morissette and C.J. Smith, the Georgia transfers, are both sophomores. So, and then Hudson Card actually has, I believe, a year of eligibility he can use next year due to the COVID years, I believe. So, you know, this team could be, you know, definitely on the upswing for sure.
Yeah, I don't necessarily put too much stock in, like, how much – college eligibility guys have left anymore. Pretty much everybody's on a 1 year contract in my head now with the NIL and how all that works now. But
fair.
Yeah.
So Russ, I know you had some other questions for us.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've kind of covered that with dark horses and you know, kind of who we think's gonna do what, but is there another guy that you're just excited to see in a pre uniform this year?
Another guy that I'm excited to see.
Or player group, like.
I mean, I feel like the two guys stick out in my mind right now. And they're both guys that we've seen play. But I'm really excited to see Gus Hartwig, like, finish out. Like, he is the definition of a Boilermaker, in my opinion. Playing a game with two broken hands, like, just playing through injuries. Tough, gritty, tenacious. And he's an on-the-field leader. So I'm just excited to see him play again. But I'm probably most excited when I look at offense. I'm really excited for Max Clair. I mean, he was a huge surprise last season. Got injured. I just hope that he can stay healthy. And Russ, I think your prediction of him leading the receiving corps, let's say in receptions, isn't far-fetched given what we saw last season. So he's probably – those two are probably the two I'm most excited about seeing, which I tend to be a more defensive-oriented person, so the fact that I'm not picking a defensive player is unique. But what about you guys?
If there's any player in particular – I don't know. I think I feel like I've talked about everybody that I'm pretty excited to see. I mean, I feel like I've brought it up a lot, like over the last few episodes, but the O-line is just something I'm really excited to see. I love how hard they hit that in the portal. I mean, they were just bringing guys in left, right, and center. There's especially, and I think he might be injured. I'm not 100% sure. He was a JUCO transfer. He might have torn his labrum and maybe out this year. But he's like 6'7", like 365 pounds or something. Just a massive, massive guy. Can't remember what his name. I think it was like Kai Green or something like that. Or I don't remember what his name was. But yeah, huge, huge dude. So I'm just excited for the offense. Jaquan Bolden
out of Perkinson, Mississippi, 6'7", 350. Yeah.
Yeah. Massive, massive guy. So I don't. Is he on the IR? Is he good to go?
Not sure. I haven't really heard anything.
Yeah,
about
he's not. There was no injury updates on the depth chart we have. One comment here we have is a freshman kicker, Spencer Porath. He's not listed as second on the depth chart. It's an or with Ben Freehill. So we'll have to see what happens there. Yeah, that's exciting. But Russ, what do you think?
Well, since you said you neglected defense, I'll start with defense. And
yeah,
I'm excited to see, you know, Dylan Thienemann and this defensive backfield, and really defensive unit as a whole, what they do this season. Because we talked a lot, and I feel like people forgot it a lot. We talked a lot about when Walters took the job, and we finally, you know, everybody calmed down over that initial reaction and started saying, okay, what has this guy done? What's his history? You know, what's his track record? You know, when he was at Illinois, I believe his first year as defense, the defense was kind of what we did last year, right? Like, it was around the 100 in FBS. It was towards the bottom of the Big Ten. But his second year, it jumped to like top 30 in the country. So if we've got those guys in place and it makes that jump, that's going to be one of those things that takes us from being people that, you know, being that team that people expect to be 18th in the league to pushing for a bowl bid and maybe even 8 wins. You know, Dylan Thienemann, I'm very excited about him because we talked about earlier, him getting more involved as a playmaker, as a punt returner. And also if that front 7 or front 10 is much improved, he's going to be able to eat a whole lot more back there and not worry about covering everybody's 6 as much. So that's going to be huge. And Nylon Green, when he gets healthy, I know he wasn't mentioned because he's not in the depth chart because he's being held out of game, but he's probably going to be our top corner this year. And the way he's able to perform is going to impact games humongously. So I'm excited about the defense. And I think that, there's a world where Hudson Card gets in the Heisman race, gets in the Heisman conversation, and gets in some award situations, because with what he did last year, and people were disappointed in the result, were disappointed in 4-8, disappointed in, you know, the injuries and the O-line, everything like that, he was still third in the Big Ten in passing yards per game. And if he plays that Northwestern game, we most likely win that game. And at 5-7, we could have gone bowling instead of Minnesota. And then we won a bowl game. And now we're talking about a 6-7 instead of 4-8 team. And like, now people look at things differently. But Hudson Card truly is, to me, an NFL talent at quarterback. And I'm stoked to see what he can do this year with a revamped roster, with a full offseason of a fully stocked roster and a deep roster. So he could really shock some people.
Yeah, we have a great comment here about Hudson Card. Caleb says, most excited to see Card. I think the last two games he played, he was dominant versus IU and Minnesota. Agree with both of those. Making plays out of nothing just seems way more comfortable and than earlier in the year. And he wasn't even healthy in those games. Yeah, I forgot about that. Last year, I think I started to hype for him and was talent, but I think with this new line, solid back, size, and speed, wide lets his talent shine more, which showed that he got more comfortable. Yeah, I think that one of the big commonalities among his best games was that he was protected last season.
Yeah, to the healthiest O-line games we had were Illinois and Minnesota. Y'all remember what happened in those games?
They were blowouts, in our favor.
Caleb, great comments tonight too, so don't be sorry at all for the comments.
We're
why I said before, there's no way Indiana holds a candle to what Purdue's going to look like and what West Lafayette's going to look like on Saturday. Like, it's going to be this team and this fan base packed out the stadium when we were 2-7 playing Minnesota at home last year. Like, do you think they're ready for an explosion in year 2 of Walter's era? Yeah, we're ready.
And I want to see this out. You guys will have to like take a video of it and send it to me because I'm not going to be at the game Saturday. But they're like hyping up this intro video this year for
Oh Greece. Yeah, I'll have videos of that. Don't worry.
So, I'll wear your hat, Greg. I got Greg, you. Now I got to wear it every episode.
Greg, drop in the chat if you would. What player are you most excited about seeing? New player, returning player? That's what we're.
While we're waiting on his comment to that answer or to that question. I thought of a question, just something fun, nothing serious here. But if you could add one player from Purdue's last three seasons, who's not there anymore, to come back, offense or defense, I already know who my answer would be. But who
I was going to say, I can guarantee I know who yours is going to be. Yeah,
you always said it like every episode all summer.
From like the last three seasons, they're not here anymore. It doesn't matter if they're in the NFL now or if they're playing on another team. Who would you want to bring back for this year that you feel like would help the team?
I bet I could guess. I guess Frank's.
You think you could guess mine? Who do you think I would say? And I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
His initials are CT.
That wasn't who I immediately – a lot of players are running through my head, but yes, you were absolutely right. Yeah, you were absolutely right. Now, I mean, that's purely self. So who Russ is referring to is Corey Trice. I was a big fan of Corey Trice his entire time.
I thought you were going to make a Cam Allen joke. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. everyone knows my thoughts on Cam Allen as well. Yeah, Corey Trice for sure. He did his job. He shut people down. I mean, he was drafted for a reason. You never heard his name, and that's a good thing when you're a defensive back, in my opinion. His size was crazy. I met the guy, was shocked at how big he was. I actually met him when I stormed the field after the Ohio State game. Believe it or not, it's when I met him there. I know Russ, you met him as well. Yeah. When we think about need on this team, it's in the comments, probably who I'd pick. Caleb. Caleb is on point with his comments tonight. My final answer would probably be David Bell, though. Let me just think about to make this team 100% well-rounded, we need an NFL caliber receiver, like someone like David Bell. Not saying none of these guys aren't, but that's probably who I would pick. Just
I didn't know who put a hex on the Pro Boilers this year. I think we've got like four or five guys that all got injured like 3 or 4 days of each other. Durham, Jones, Rondale, everybody. Dude, they were all dropping like flies.
Got a lot of great comments here. We got some Dylan, Nick Scorton, which Damon, I think that was yours, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the guy.
He's looking back if he wants to, Nick. I know you're listening.
So. I'm going to go with the guy that's not in the comments and, you know, was an NFL talent and has been pretty gifted with the start of his NFL career. And I would help the defense out a little bit and I'd bring George Karloftis back to play his prime with Yanni in his prime. And him being on that defensive line with Jenkins behind him and Thieneman behind him and Yanni and Will Hill behind him. You know, let's talk about that defense taking a step this year. Woo.
Good God, that'd be disgusting. I think I know.
Could we have him in his current form though? You know, 2 years into the NFL.
If it's his current form, it's over.
yeah.
I know I know it's past the 3 year mark, but of course, Rondale Moore. Like, who wouldn't want that guy to come back to Purdue for one more year?
See, I love Rondale Moore. I'm a huge Rondale Moore fan. He went to high school like a mile from where I'm sitting right now.
Should I mute Frank now, Damon?
So I feel no. I'm just saying I would rather have David Bell. I'd rather have David Bell.
That's interesting. I would pick Rondale Moore. I love David Bell as well, but I would pick Rondale Moore 100 times over David Bell. I really would.
Rondale Moore is the most exciting player in the last decade or so for Purdue. David Bell was probably the most consistent, reliable, and also still very good player, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I would just like if I like Rondale Moore is the guy where you can throw a screen and he'll get you a touchdown. David Bell's the guy you can rely on to be where he's supposed to be and catch the ball. I mean, look what he did to Cooper DeJean and Riley Moss.
I was gonna say you say that about David Bell, like he's like some possession receiver that just does his job, but he destroyed Big Ten teams, right? Like how many times did he go off for 200 plus yards against Iowa or like that Michigan State upset when they were number 3 in the country and we upset them? Like he was a big game boss. Like he just took over big games. Yep. And then Charlie Jones, I don't know if we mentioned that, Cody brought him up too. Charlie Jones is another guy that, you know, if you ranked you know, the top three receiver years, and you take Rondale in his freshman year and David Bell in one of those years and Charlie Jones in his year with Purdue, and you try to rank those three, I don't think there's a wrong answer. Like,
exactly, yeah. Yeah, and that, and the only reason I didn't even really consider Charlie Jones is just because he was so brief. Yeah. You know, I have bigger sample size. I immediately thought of Rondale Moore and then went, oh, you know, probably David Bell. But yeah, just because his tenure was so brief and I just don't have the mental history. But Russ, the main reason I'm skeptical about Cooper DeJean having an NFL career is because of what David Bell did to him multiple times. I mean, you know, David Bell, he's not starting in the NFL. You know, he's a second tier NFL receiver and just ran all over him. So if Cooper DeJean had trouble containing him, I mean, we'll see.
I will say one guy that I feel like kind of gets forgotten about in the Brahm era, and I really hate that he wasn't able to play his last eligible season in college, and that was Milton Wright. I think he could have been awesome.
Yeah.
He would have been wide receiver one that year that he was supposed to come back his first senior year and wasn't able to because of, you know, whatever he had going on personally. Or academically, I don't remember what it was, but I think that's somebody that I think about all the time. I'm like, man, I wonder what that season would have been like. Which, good for Milton Wright. I think he just got picked up by the Chargers. He's on their practice squad or something. So good for him.
Which my favorite thing about Milton Wright was his commitment video. Does anyone remember the video when he committed?
Was it the train?
It was the train.
Yeah.
So like it was this really like highly produced video of like the. I think there was like an Alabama elephant and then maybe like an Ohio State Buckeye because it was between like Purdue, Alabama, and Ohio State. When was the last time that happened? But and then like the train just came through and like mowed him over. And then it just like panned to him and his family all sitting on their couch wearing Purdue hoodies. It was like, man, that's like someone put time, effort, and energy into that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was really, really good. Caleb says
I agree, Caleb. Yeah, I agree. I would put, like I said, I don't think there's a wrong answer, but I would put him third. And I think kind of what Frank said. I don't think he was, you know, obviously he was the brief of the three. And then I think talent, as far as physical talent wise, I think that Bell and Moore are above him.
Yeah, so Caleb's effectively saying that Bell seems to be the right answer because of the consistency factor. And I think Rondale Moore is your higher risk, higher reward player for sure.
Damon closes it out and does like sponsors and stuff, there is one last like thing I want you guys to do is give me like your brief synopsis on, you know, like, you know, like you do those papers when you're in high school and you do an introductory paragraph and then a conclusion paragraph. Give me your introductory paragraph to this football season, like what to expect, what you know, what mindset you have going into this season.
Okay. Man, I wish you'd have let me prepare for this one, Russ, but it takes the
I mean, I can go first. You guys want me to go first.
Okay. Here's my introduction to the 2024 season. It is the 2024 season. There are lots of newcomers and a lot of people left. There's a lot of unknowns, and for that reason, I have no idea what to expect. I hope things go well, but TBD, boiler up.
TBD.
That's my intro.
What Greg said, man, handing out pop quiz material over here.
Hey, I love it. I'm the draft guy. I'm the pop quiz guy. Let's go.
Yeah, I for this year. So this is like before seeing any games, right? Like this has to be like preseason before. I obviously like we're preseason right now because we don't play until Saturday. Because I feel very much like Frank, but also if we annihilate Indiana State, I'm chugging that Kool-Aid. All right, I got one of those backpacks with the big jugs on it and the nozzle going to my mouth. I'm chugging the Kool-Aid. So
I like Cody's. It's just the Michael Jordan statement. We are back. There you go. Who's commenting about that? Is that Dylan comment from the podcast?
That's me.
Oh,
I was okay.
I have a feeling someone in the comments are popping tonight. I feel like someone would know, and I didn't want to interrupt you guys. 90% sure that
like 303 or 308 or something like that. All purpose yards. Yeah.
That was
and
was
like an 290 game. Of them were in the first half or something.
It was an exciting game that we lost, but it was exciting because we saw him for the first time.
Yeah. So, you know, and I guess I said your introductory paragraph, and this is going to come off like a paragraph material, but, you know, remember last season for what it was, not just a 4-8 team. Like, yes, you are what your record says you are, but remember we had, by many metrics, the toughest schedule in the country. We had 2 to 3 games that we probably should have won that would have made us a bowl game against the toughest schedule in the country. We were the best team in the Big Ten in conference play and rushing the football. Hudson Card was 3rd in the conference in pass yards per game. And that was with a depleted, kind of a depleted secondary and a very depleted offensive line. We have more than stocked those positions up. Hudson Card has got another year in the system. Dylan Thiemann's coming off an All-American freshman year. Kaijan Jenkins is coming back from being 3rd in the conference in sacks. Our transfer class and our recruiting class were both top 30 classes. And you're talking, I think, like 7th or 8th in the Big Ten. So to pick us 18th in the conference is asinine. Ridiculous. I get the schedule's tough. So, yes, you could be looking at 9-3. We could be looking at 3-9. So, but just hang on to the train this year. Hang on to the train and don't be surprised if we do surprise some people and we end up 8-4 or 9-3 and maybe even pushing for a CFP conversation, because if we go 9-3 and we're talking about knocking off an Oregon or knocking off a Notre Dame and taking care of business elsewhere, this could be a very magical season that people will try and say, oh, I could have seen that coming. And there ain't a lot of people saying they're seeing that coming right now.
But do you think that without the addition of like Washington, Oregon, USC and UCLA, do you think that Purdue would still have been picked 2nd to last this year? Or do you feel like a big reason for that is the addition of talented teams like Washington, USC?
For sure. I feel like if you're not named Nebraska or maybe Iowa and you're a Big Ten West team, they're crapping on you this year because now you're not the Big Ten West no more and you're not protected no more.
Yep.
You know, right. But
I agree with that.
Yeah. If we're in the Big Ten West still, this is a season where I wouldn't be surprised we challenge for the conference championship spot because, you know, we aren't pushing Michigan, Ohio State, or Penn State for the West title, obviously. So I think this season could really shock some people, because even that season that Brom took us to the Big Ten championship game, there weren't a lot of people that were really truly believing that we were going to win the Big Ten West.
Players did, though. They were saying it all season, too.
Because it was a rough start that year, if you remember.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And I think, like, I mean, no one's asked this, but, like, my message is just going to be to, like, chill. We just need to chill and just let it ride. I mean, remember what happened, Russ, last time we started 0-3 as our resident historian?
Russ, sorry. Go ahead, Russ.
Say again?
What happened last time we started 0-3?
What time we started 0-3? That was the year we won the Big Ten championship game, didn't it? Because everybody said, hey, look, it's one conference game because it was Penn State. And it hurt, but one conference lost 3 games in, even though we were 0-3, all our goals were still in front of us.
Maybe I'm incorrect. I thought the last time we started 0-3 was the year we upset Ohio State.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, but maybe, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Another good comment from a couple good comments from Caleb here. So, you know, his thesis or his introductory statement would be, you know, Walters enters his first real season as a head coach with the type of defensive – we got the comments pouring in right now. I have to pull back, scroll up again. I'm on my phone here. with the type of defensive backfield to enact his defensive style and an offense led by as talented as a QB as most any big team who has had a full season under his belt in the system. And then he says all he's praying for is a win in Wisconsin, which I think we all are. He's going to be in Madison with his dad. Last time they went to Ann Arbor, it was the first win there in 40 plus years. Okay, so Caleb's got some good luck magic with him. Let's end this curse. It makes Walters royalty forever, no matter what else happens. That is very true. Cody with a comment here saying, here's the thing. They don't care about us until we start taking out of the ESPN bandwagon teams, and then they will be kissing our butts. But we've fallen for it. So and then Greg here with another comment that says the temptation to overreact and have hot takes for a 12-game season is very real. Just need to relax and enjoy the development. And then Dylan says, of course, you make a pod appearance when I'm not here, Greg. Sorry, I just started going down the whole list.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we got it.
Like you said, Caleb comes in with the good points. And, you know, that is something that, you know, I didn't add into my statement. But, you know, it's something we've talked about, and I've talked about and mentioned when we talk about the roster construction and what we went into that last season, you know, looking like as far as a roster and a team goes. But, you know, when Walters came in, he came in, you know, behind schedule as far as just being a head coach in general. Like if he'd been a head coach before and he got hired 2 to 3 weeks after a head coach would normally get hired. So he's behind the ball on that. He's behind the ball in recruiting. The transfer portal has been nuts lately. So you're behind the ball on the transfer portal. You're trying to learn how to be a head coach. You're trying to move your family to this city, right? There's so many moving parts and so many things that he just was like, he talked about it's like drinking out of a fire hose. But now he's like, you saw him even getting into the season last year. I felt like he was more confident as the season went on, and you give him that whole off season, man, I'm excited this year.
So if there's one criticism I have so far of Coach Walters, it's that he can sometimes be he can sometimes be a bit too candid, which is both a good and a bad thing at times. But he said that in the interview today, when he looks at the team this time last year versus the team this time right now, he has so much more to work with. And so my comment about him being candid was purely to say he's not the type of person to say that if he's just blowing hot air. So yeah. I think that he understands that he was playing with a skeleton crew last season, just to put it bluntly.
Well, who is very candid that we love at Purdue?
Matt Painter. Okay. You know, like, I was thinking football. I'm like, not Brom. No, like, yeah. Cause yeah, we have a comment here. It said too candid feels weird after Brom. Agreed.
Yeah.
Brom was the opposite.
Not, you know, cause Hazel was obviously, you know, Hazel was, you know, yeah. And then yeah, Brom was not candid. So yeah, football, it seems like Purdue fans maybe compartmentalize too much between football and basketball, but that's how Painter's been in basketball, right? He's been very candid, right? Yeah. From when, you know, guys like Eastern and Harms transferred out to when, you know, guys just stunk and he just called people out on stinking. Like, you know, we love it when Painter did it, but like some people were kind of iffy about Walton. I know football is a little bit different beast in itself.
Well, but I mean, I think the only reason is because he spoke out about Tari and Grant and like things like that. You know, it's but he did it in a way to praise the crowd and to praise the attendance and say like, hey, because of this great atmosphere, we just got a verbal commit from a five-star player and just like things like that. Where it's like, maybe we shouldn't. Yeah.
I will say saying that before like pen's been put to paper and like it's announced as like an official commitment was pretty audacious, but you know, you gotta love the confidence there. But I will say, you know, him talking about having basically a skeleton crew, saying that in another way, this season, I will say if that was, you know, his thoughts last year, he did a really good job hiding it because you felt like when he was talking about the team and their potential, he was like, I feel like we could, you know, be pretty good. So it's cool that's also something that's different from Brahms' era too, is I felt like no matter what the team did, it was always like very negative, talking about ways that, you know, oh, we're doing really, you know, we really need to make an improvement here and improvement there. But, you know, it's nice to hear Walter say like, oh yeah, you know, they're actually doing really good in this, that, and the other. And so that's been a cool change as well.
When I think about the last three coaches, you had Hazel, who answered every question like a politician, right? So he would be just like, well, we need to diagnose what isn't working and we need to understand what is working and improve on the things that aren't working, but can continue to do the things that are working. And then you had Brom, who was great at just talking without saying anything.
Oh my God. Yeah. Every week was like, oh, Rondale Moore is week to week for.
Yeah,
like,
I think Greg's talking about the Rondale Moore situation 100%.
Yeah, he's dealing with some things equal season ending injury he won't mention. Yeah. Yeah. Brom, you'd ask him a question and he would talk for 5 minutes and you'd be like, what did he say? Like, he didn't say anything. He just spoke. But then you have Coach Walters, who's like, hey, next season, the schedule is really hard. We need NIL money. Like, just like. I mean, it's just a crazy whirlwind of a roller coaster we've had when we think of the personalities of our last three coaches.
You'll enjoy this, Frank. So I ran into a guy in work today that I hadn't seen since probably last September or so. And we talked a lot of football. He's a big Louisville fan. And, you know, amongst other things, we talked about how I warned him about Plummer. He brought up, you know, how great Brom did and how he just couldn't recruit at Purdue and you can't recruit at Purdue. And I quickly brought up to him, I said, you realize that Walt has signed as many 4-stars in his year and a half at Purdue that Brohm did in 6 years. So don't tell me you can't recruit there, because the guy before Brohm tried to say you can't recruit nobody there too, but Walt's doing it. So
Greg's comments here are cracking me up. Brohm did it with Sindelar too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. That's probably the best example. Yeah, Russ, you're right. Hazel tried to use that excuse. You can't recruit at Purdue. And I'm not angry at Brohm. I'm not speaking negatively about Brohm. I think Brohm's success in his first season at Louisville had a lot more to do with what he inherited than anything else. Because they were a team that was trending upward. They were a team whose coach left. Right, they weren't a team who fired their coach, like right. they were, their fan base was starting to like praise.
Didn't
the coach.
8-4 his last year.
Yeah, so it was something like that, and then so you inherit an 8-4 team, and then you bring some of your key playmakers from your previous school, Eric Miller, you know, guys like that. I mean, I'll be curious to see if he's able to sustain that success. I hope he is. I really do. I really hope he's able to. But yeah, it's. I think it has a lot to do with what he inherited, for you know, more than anything else. Walters inherited a skeleton crew, just to pull a Walters and be blunt about it. So, yeah.
Well, does anybody else have any final thoughts here before we shout out our sponsors and wrap up for the night?
No, nothing from me.
Greg, with a final comment here, says, nothing will ever convince me otherwise that Hazel took the Purdue job for the payday. He knew that he leveraged Kent State into a Power 5 contract. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So,
I like Caleb's comment here. I met Hazel on a tour of the practice facility with family, and he put on the same performance the whole time. So weird to talk to, seemed robotic. Yeah, I met him a couple times, and he was very, very strange. The first time was a student, when I was a student, and he was walking around trying to convince people to go to games. And so he walked up to me in the student union and
one leg like a furnace, right?
Yeah. Don't ever take a stadium that's 100 years old and try to change the name.
I remember when we had Markel Jones on the show, and he talked about how like he didn't even like to have music like playing in the locker room.
Yeah. He would like tell him to like meditate and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, don't get amped up. Don't get excited. Just it's business as usual. Like, just
yeah, it was Chuck T who was talking about that he had the like almost like a CEO mentality.
Yeah.
That he treated his team like a corporation almost.
Are we really ending this episode by talking like 5 minutes about Darryl Hazel? Like
Russ, it's important to realize how far we've come.
And how stupid those comparisons to from Walters to Hazel were last year. That was so dumb. When he got fired first.
Darryl Hazel part two. Yeah. I mean, he. Darryl Hazel never won 4 games. Come on.
Yep.
And so he won as many
Big Ten games, even in the 3-6 year, as Hazel did all his career. So.
9 games. And
Greg says immaculate wardrobe, God. Though. Agreed, man. Like the vest and the crimped hat, and yeah, 95 degrees. We went to a Q&A session for Darryl Hazel, and I went with my boss actually at the time, and it was just like an open like town hall style Q&A, and that was his question, is like, how do you wear those vests when it's 90 degrees outside?
We're still talking about Hazel.
He said that's what he always did. The comments are popping off about Hazel. Yeah. Caleb, appreciate you stopping by, man.
Absolutely, man.
Really enjoyed the input.
Yeah. His suits off the field were sharp. They were. Yeah.
Well, guys, we have Purdue football on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
An exciting note to end on.
I will say, though, since you three are going to be there, you, Dylan, Frank, Russ, and Dylan, since you three are going to be there, I do expect a halftime report by the train.
Yeah.
By the Boiling Laker Special. So I do expect to see that on Twitter sometime, or X sometime on Saturday. But other than that, we'll go ahead and shout out all of our sponsors. So, of course, we are partnered with the network, the College Huddle. So if you're just into college sports in general, we have over 70 plus schools in the College Huddle network. So tons of schools that you could learn about. You know, if you're ever interested, I think Russ mentioned earlier, the Pause Up podcast for FIU. You know, sometimes I see those guys go live, and I'll hop in, and those guys, they cover every sport. I mean, they probably cover, you know, things that I've never heard of that they have at that FIU, you know, even at the club level. So, lots of really good guys out there. Greg, Cody, everybody, we'll see you guys on Saturday. Well, I won't see you there, but Russ and Frank and Dylan will. But so College Huddle is great. Tons of schools in that network. Lots of people you can read about. College Basketball Analytics is one of our sponsors. Now, of course, you know, football, not going to really be using them a whole lot during the football season. But thankfully, college basketball is really not that far away. John Rothstein will let me know just about every day how far away we are from college basketball. So we'll be utilizing that again. And if you're a fan of the analytics and the data and the statistics like Frank is and like we're all becoming, you know, College Huddle or College Basketball Analytics is a great resource for that. You can get it for free just to check out some baseline stuff. But if you really want to get into the nitty gritty, you can pay for a plan and really see just about everything that you could ever think of to be a stat on College Basketball Analytics. And then if you are going to the game Saturday, you feel like you need some new clothes, maybe your wardrobe, your Purdue apparel is not quite as je ne sais quoi as it should be, go head over to martinvintage.com, use code BXP at checkout. Frank and Russ, repping the Martin Vintage. Love it, guys. I'm not right now. I'm repping the what should be Big Ten champions from 2022, maybe sooner than later. Who knows? But yeah, go to martinvintage.com, use code BXP at checkout for 10% off. Let them know that we sent you there. And then, of course, our guys over at Cincy Blitzboards. Blitzboards is a great game for tailgates, any kind of event, whatever. Great yard games. Baptisms. To play baptisms. You know, you could bring it into church with you, I'm sure. It wouldn't be noticed at all. It's not like they're big or anything. Yeah, go to CincyBlitzboards.com. I mean, they have stuff for every team, professional, collegiate. I mean, they could probably even make your favorite, you know, if you're in high school, if you want your high school team to have a Blitzboard, I'm sure they'd be more than willing to make it. So check them out. And, that is pretty much it for the night, you guys. We've gone pretty long tonight, actually. This is probably one of our longer episodes that we've done in a while. So obviously we're super excited about Purdue football. You know, we've got a lot of things to look forward to, a lot of exciting things to look at. And, we'll see you guys next week and hopefully talking about a great, great Purdue win. So boiler up and hammer down.
Boiler up.
Boiler up.